We, at the Business Council, started in this about 4 years ago when we conducted a study, Higher Education and the Economy. And we took a look at the entire post-secondary education system and reviewing folks from throughout it. And what we saw were three vast changes that are going on in post-secondary education. First of all, you've got exploding demand for post-secondary education services from early adulthood all the way through life. Huge demand for a whole variety of new kinds of services. Second big development we saw was growing competition. A lot of new players are entering this market and scrambling it up in a whole variety of new and different ways to meet learner needs throughout Oregon. The third big change relating to the second is the system is getting scrambled up. You're seeing in Oregon right now four-year colleges operating on community college campuses, independent colleges, working with public universities in a whole variety of ways, which is blurring the lines between community colleges, public universities, and private universities. Add that with internet-based services across state borders, a whole blurring of the lines. The question we asked is, do we have the framework to enable all Oregonians to have access to post-secondary education, and do we have a framework that stimulates tremendously creative responses to needs in our post-secondary environment? And as we looked at, we saw three major issues at the time. One is, we had to recognize that we have scarce dollars here at the state level. We can't fund everything everybody wants to do in post-secondary education. Much as we would like, we have to make choices. And it's a state policy issue that where we need to make choices. The second issue, as we looked at the system, was the state university system in particular had at the time a very cumbersome governance process. It took a long time for new program approval, very weak incentives for responding to demands of individual customers, if you will, or clients, or however you want to describe it, to develop new programs. So we came up with a set of recommendations at the time that I'm very proud to say the university system and the entire higher education community over the last 4 years have responded incredibly well to those recommendations. Under the board leadership and Joe Cox and others, you've seen a decentralization and a new funding model in the university system. You've seen the community colleges with a new funding model, much more responsive. The vision we had in the task force, and I think it's the vision most everyone shares, is the state role is one of allocating dollars based on student enrollments, and individual campuses have much more autonomy for making decisions and choices on what programs to offer, how to serve, and what to do, how their budgets. So when I hear the community colleges, for example, describing the need for independence, I wouldn't disagree. That was when we looked at the model for what we thought the world of higher education was going to be like in the future, the community colleges come right to mind. Independent boards, flexible, nimble, that's the kind of environment we're trying to create for the post-secondary community. So that's the direction I think Oregon is moving. I think we should be very proud. What this bill does is really facilitate that direction in moving that direction forward. What it does in basically the most significant way is by looking at the budget. We in the state system has done a great job in developing a new funding model to organize by access student with the cell values. It specifies how much to spend at freshman, sophomore, junior years, and it allocates based on student enrollment. But that model has not been integrated with a very similar model that the community college system. So you could start seeing what the choices are between community college access, four-year access, and you can start looking at how much you're paying at different levels of education. What this would simply do is ask to have a comprehensive budget presented to the legislature based on the new funding model that looks at everything at once and makes decisions all at once. That's the fundamental requirement of the bill is to create a budget, ask the governor to create a budget along those lines. And I think that in itself would be very significant to help you make decisions. It would help reinforce the new funding model that the state system has put in place and put you on record that you support this framework for budgeting. That's the requirement of the bill. The second thing the bill does on governance is simply ask some questions about what is the long-term governance structure going to be like in Oregon. It doesn't resolve any of that. It asks the commission to take a look at those issues and come back with recommendations. But that's down the road. That would be for the next legislature. I think we all heard clearly when the original bill came out, don't change the board and commission structure now. But I think it's a natural question to ask as you think about the way the environment in Oregon is going. But it doesn't presume anything. The one thing, again, I would argue strongly, and if you needed to put this in the bill, I would completely agree, you should not change local autonomy of community colleges. I think that would be a huge mistake, and if you need to say that and upfront to satisfy that concern, we believe, at least from, I think everyone who's been participating in these questions agree, that that decentralization and flexibility is very important. I would also stress this is not about setting any school's budget. It's about setting a funding menu that directs dollars based on student enrollment. So that's what it does. I would agree with Tom. It should be a two-year commission. I wouldn't make it permanent. I think that commission would come back to you to take a look. And you'd have another chance to examine what the right governance structure is after they've had a chance to take a look at the current system and make recommendations to you. The big thing I think it does is help reinforce the budgeting process that's already emerging and allow you, I think, to get a clear, more full picture of how the dollars are being spent and be able to make clear and probably, I think, more effectively make choices for the system. So that's what it's about. And I would love to work with anyone again on improving and perfecting the legislation.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Mr. Wiseman, I take it that you don't support the -1 amendments, at least to the extent that it sets up a permanent commission with 4-year terms and reappointments and all those things.
I think when we talked about this, and we just got these yesterday. My understanding, personally, and this is just me, as a group of us got together, Gary and Joe Cox and Cam and others. I was thinking this is a 2-year, a temporary, and
short
I think
term.
To get the new budget process set up, and that again, the requirement of the bill is that the governor present a consolidated, comprehensive budget using the principles of the new funding model. It would not tell the community colleges how to distribute except as it does now. I mean, the governor gives guidance, you give guidance on distribution formulas, but it doesn't. It basically sets the parameters as we do now. But it simply sets it requires that there be a consolidated budget, and I think imprints the new model in statute and gives your blessing to the new way of doing business. And then it would report back. We'd hope to have a very open, full discussion of governance that you've heard earlier. I mean, I would hope this commission would engage the entire state of Oregon on what the right governing model is for the future. But it doesn't change governance at this stage the way I would picture it. And again, if you wanted to make it a 2-year, that was what I was thinking about in the first place. And I think that's where we were.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Weiss, I probably should have asked this question of Mr. Matthews when he was up here, but since he's no longer here, you get to catch this one. Was anyone from the Governor's Office of Educational Policy involved in the work group?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, I've talked with the Governor's Office throughout this.
But Jean Thorne wasn't.
I've been talking with Jean. She wasn't in.
She wasn't in the work group
or
anything.
Group. No.
And I don't want to ask you to speak on behalf of the governor, but I'm interested.
Never do that.
since it seems to me the governor could do this, what you've described, not what's in the bill or the -1 amendments. The governor could set up an advisory panel with the stroke of a pen, and you don't need us. So the fact that he hasn't done that, I'm inclined to interpret to mean this particular governor thinks that he's getting enough advice, probably more than he wants. So as it's sort of boiled down to a much simpler proposal, I now start to wonder why we need to even get in the act.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, I think you, the legislature, have a huge interest in getting the governance and the budgeting system of higher education correctly done. And I think one of the challenges as we move to this new budgeting system is I think it's very important for you to bless the system that the state system and the community colleges have crafted it. I think for you it is an opportunity. And I would hope as policymakers you would like to see this kind of comprehensive budget presented to you next time so you can see all the elements. I will pass out afterwards, but I have an illustration so you can get a picture of what the budget would look like in our policy playbook if you haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very much simpler, easier to understand framework, and again, one that I think will help you see your policy choices much more clearly. And I think you have an interest in asking for that. And again, I would say that the governor has strongly, when we've worked with the governor on our education task force, and he was very enthusiastic about the direction I'm encouraged, and Tom can speak to that, the direction of the new funding model, and very actively engaged in this. He hasn't, I don't know what his position will be on this legislation, but again, I think it reinforces where we've been going and simply and helps solidify the gains we've already seen.
Mr. Chair.
If I might have a quick follow-up.
A follow-up?
And I understand we're past our time. In the course of half-hour, 40-minute discussion, I have seen, and maybe it was because I didn't see it originally, but I believe it's actually evolved as we've discussed it here, from a rather sweeping governance change in the original bill to what we saw when we first arrived with the Dash One amendments, and now to an examination of what role post-secondary education plays in our educational system and our economy. And as it's evolved, if I understand that evolution correctly, it's getting to a point where I could be pretty enthusiastic about it. And if I'm interpreting that evolution correctly, I would encourage another go at putting that into words on the page that mean what we've just discussed. And I would suggest that a formal participation by someone in the governor's office would be appropriate at this stage.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, again, I think one of the concerns, whenever you bring up an issue as heated as like this one, and again, with the original amendments, I think there are a lot of concerns. Again, I'm trying to interpret, this is my interpretation of what the amendments were attempting. Other people can speak as well, but again, I think you could overread what's in this bill, and if there are changes, obviously, we may need to amend these amendments. They've just been out a day, and it may not quite connect, and certainly concerns are raised, but that's, I think, what the intent is there.
Representative Morrison, Representative Nelson, thank you. In response to Senator Nolan's question, and I'll have a question for you.
You're Senator now.
Wrong chamber?
Maybe you are.
Maybe I am.
My conversation with Jean Thun from the governor's office concerning the quality education model was very favorable. She supported the idea of the same kind of program that is now exists for K-12. Existing for higher ed, wouldn't that accomplish the same end as what you're asking, and with no change in governance at all, it would be a comprehensive study of the needs of higher ed by a group including members of your organization and make a recommendation to the legislature which they would have to listen to or explain?
The only, Mr. Chair, Representative Morrison, I think they're actually very similar if you take a look at this bill, what it does. The only thing that's a little different in this bill is it does spell out the categories, the funding categories in the new funding model, which I think is a good thing to have you, the legislature, on record for. But it is very similar. What it asks is for commission to examine and present a consolidated budget. It would also consolidate. I mean, the other piece is it includes independent colleges and community colleges and the state system schools and health sciences, for that matter, all in one place. So you have an ability to connect across. So it's not, and I think in the world we're going into, that's very important because, as I say, there's a lot of blurring of lines here among sectors. I understand each has a distinct important role to play, but there are some blurring that would be facilitated by this process.
The other thing, Mr. Chair, Representative Forsett, that I would add is that with respect to the governance issue within the Oregon University system, the governor has asked our board to look at that. We can't make statutory changes. There would be statutory changes necessary if we were to create local boards, and I think this kind of approach would allow the appropriate examination of that and do it on a university by university basis and come back and see what's necessary. So I think that element of it you couldn't do, I mean, you can't do without ultimately involving the legislature, and this would be a way of doing it where you have a good study during the interim period.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Weiss, I just want to tell you that I do already know it is my responsibility to look at a comprehensive budget. I mean, that's why I was elected, and that's what we're doing. I just want to make sure that's known because, I mean, that's one of our primary purposes, I believe, for being here, and a lot of citizens hold us fiscally accountable and responsible. Follow up, Mr. Chair, please. When, from a business viewpoint, I mean, I find it very difficult to think of what we are truly have now done with this complex situation we want to put together. Coming from a holding company with, you know, 23 subsidiary companies, and as administrator of the budgets for every one of those companies, plus the holding company, I cannot imagine, you know, taking each uniqueness and meshing them together and coming out into a holding company with anything that makes total sense because they're so unique. You know, the 747 operations don't mesh with the helicopter operations, which don't mesh with the ground handling operations. So that's what we appear to have here. And while our focus, I'm glad about the focus, sad about the situation, because I believe that we felt there was, and I still believe there is, greater accountability than we're given our units credit for at this time, and perhaps we can work it out later. But I can no more think of doing this than I could taking all these companies and putting them in one budget, because the account numbers will never mesh. If that's our problem, they'll never mesh.
Chair, Representative Nelson, I'll come visit you, but I think there's a huge distinction we need to make. Is this is not a proposal for the state to be doing the individual budgets of individual schools. Far from it. The way the state is moving is to allocate its dollars on a per-student basis, just like the community colleges have been done for a number of years, where they receive dollars from the state, not based on what their local budgets are, as you're describing, but based on how many students enroll, basically. And that's where the state is going, so that it actually simplifies vastly the state's job of saying, how much can we afford in terms of access at different stages of life? The money then goes to the schools. Each school is responsible for its own budget. And under the model that's emerged in the state system, certainly in the community college system. And that we totally applaud that, because it's exactly for the reason you're saying. It simplifies and allows each school to have the flexibility to create its own budget. And that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Mr. Chair, I just need a follow-up, because that is not what I said. I just want to be sure that's on the record. Any more than, you know, Linfield College is exactly like Willamette. I mean, these are all unique within their, you know, have their specialties, just like, you know, our category.
Great.
Thank you. Are we losing members here on a permanent basis?
We're doing a three hour.
Mr. Chair, there is a important matter coming up on the floor. Yes. I think we want to be there.
Are we moving anything?
Well, we were hoping to move 2598 during the recess meeting, and perhaps we can hustle on House Bill 28. So we will recess or close the hearing on House Bill 1378 and open a work session on House Bill 2598. Janet, would you summarize for us real quick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2598, you have the -4 amendments. The change from the amendments that you saw, this creates a special education task force to study funding of special education and programs. The -4 amendments changed what were assumptions in the bill that Representative Starr noticed to more study, additional study items, and so that's the change in this bill. The bill does connect with the funding that's in another bill, Senate Bill 519, for the review of special education programs. It's $150,000. We've not heard necessarily from the Department of Education about the original bill cost. Do they think that this review will cost? But if it's not more than $150,000, it is in that Senate Bill 519.
Janet, are we talking about Ways and Means referral?
The original bill did not have a Ways and Means referral. This is a gut and stuff, but that is under discussion. And former Representative Lundquist is in the audience, and this is his concept. They're having discussions with Representative Westland on Ways and Means that he is would try to move the bill if it did go to Ways and Means.
Ways and Means is?
I think that's where we should send it.
It's our business side.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd entertain, we're in a work session, I'd entertain a motion on the -4.
So move.
Representative Morissette moves the dash four amendments to House Bill 2598. Discussion?
Is this Ways and Means?
Yes. Well, yes.
Without recommendation?
This will be the Ways and Means with the recommendation. This is the dash four that is right now.
Dash four, yep.
Okay, no objections? Okay, we'll move the dash fours. Representative Morissette?
I would move House Bill 2598 to Ways and Means as amended with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Morissette moves House Bill 2598 as amended with a due pass recommendation. This would go to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Hopkins?
One quick comment, thank you, Mr. Chair, is that this is included in the $5.2 billion for school funding.
Yes.
Carve-out.
It's a carve-out. However, one of the leading education advocacy groups, has recommended that this is something that they would support. And so I guess I would mention that at the same time. Paula, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Nolan.
Carving out.
Yeah, I think you used that term, carve out, didn't you?
No.
Oh.
No.
It's okay. No.
No, she's. Are you voting?
No, wait.
Yes, I'm voting.
Is that a yes vote?
That was a no vote.
Okay. Okay.
Smith.
Excused.
Star.
Excused.
Bonner.
Yes.
Barnhart.
No.
Hopkins.
Yes.
Rosa.
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 2598 moves to pass and moves to the Ways and Means Committee. Is Cam gone?
Cam's still here.
Where's Cam?
In Harvey.
Cam? Cam here, Harvey? Are you interested in a few more comments? At least one of us I know can stay. Okay. You sure? Well, yes, we will not be hearing 2020 today. We'll have to push it back.
Hey, Phil.
Yes. I do want to do that. We have.
The meeting has been
two of you who wanted to testify on 2020.
Right.
Yeah, well, I can stay if that's if you don't mind talking to one. It's a pretty empty group here. We'll do this again on Thursday.
We might help you understand. The speakers, the microphones are still on, just for everybody's information.
Well, the big thing is,
coming.
You have made an effort to get in here, and we hate to say, can you come back on Thursday? Isn't that when you do this?
This Thursday?
Yeah, is that right or not?
It's too real, so it depends on
so next Tuesday, you're thinking? Oh, yeah, gee whiz.
We could maybe tap it in on Thursday and then deal with it.
We can do that.
Or you can tap it in.
A tap in is just basically say we're going to open a hearing, we do it, and we close it, and there's no testimony, so we can do this later on.
We can tap it in.
Yeah, without a tap in, there's no testimony, but we have to do that. In other words, to hear certain House bills, we have to do it all by Thursday.
You can tap it in right now.
Okay.
You want to tap it in right now?
It's really, yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
You can enter it. You go ahead and listen and enter it into there.
Okay. Would you like to?
Let me just ask.
Okay, that's fine.
And then if she can come back.
Okay. Because we can open the hearing and take testimony for the record, even though I'm only here. It's a public hearing, so I can take testimony. No. Okay. Yeah, we're standing at ease.
Bill, you're you're carrying is way down the list.
It's at the end of the thing, I think, the very last one. There's no such thing.
I think that maybe I have to agree.
You can do more?
Well, I decided there's two gals to come.
Oh, darn.
And I said, if necessary, you know, we can open the hearing and listen to the public, at least for the record. I begin the session with an apology. I feel really badly that you've been so patient and it didn't work out to have the full committee here to listen to your testimony, but it is important that you get this on the record, so it will not be wasted, even though it's Representative Hodgson and I who are listening. And a note for the record, we are a subcommittee at this point. Please.
Well, thank you very much for allowing us to give testimony. Chair Becklin, my name is Joan L. Craig. I am the director of Mid-Valley Learning Center, which is a school and a center for language learning disabled children, i.e. dyslexia. And I'd like you at this time, Representative Nolan was talking about these funny little symbols on pages, and I'd like for you at this time to take a look at funny little symbols in the back of your package on the left side. This would be about the second paper in the end, and it has funny little symbols on it.
Excuse me, funny little.
There's your funny little packet with the funny little symbols. And let me just say, I am grateful to Mark Simmons to having the forthright sense to see that this bill should be in order, and I'm thankful to be here. As you can see those funny little symbols, if I asked you to read them just off the hand, I see some of you laughing, it would be quite hard for you to do so unless I, as a professional special education therapist, help a student to read that, the people who have dyslexia, the children who have a language learning disability. They would not be able to read that. However, I can say that it says, "Come on," said Betsy, "we have to pick up the corn. We don't have another can of popcorn." And I know you can't see that until you actually look. And the reason is, if I may take that, we have the B and the D. Thank you. The reason for that concern is because children who have a language learning problem have a problem with this letter, which seems to be a B. And if you turn it this way, then it's a Q. But if you turn it around so you can see it the other way, it's a D. And then it's also a P. So the children who come to us have this specific problem. Not only do the English for second languages have a problem, but so do our children who have dyslexia. Now, the reason I am here is I'm advocating that this bill be passed for several reasons. One of the reasons is I have a petition here, and this is the concern of many of the students' parents who have dyslexia. One of them is sitting next to me and will give testimony. It's a petition of support for this, and we also have 25 parents who have these petitions, and I was unable to collect them all today because I wasn't there at school. But when I go tomorrow, I will collect them. So we have approximately 400 names. We believe that this bill should be approved because of the following reasons. This bill gives the parents the right to choose a special education provider who will meet the needs of these children. I ask you to go to the back of your pamphlet again and look at a sheet that looks like this.
And as you're looking at it, I would like you to specifically see if you can tell me what it is. Now, we ask children to do that every day in classroom. But the children who have a specific language learning disability called dyslexia, they can't see that until we as professionals give them the tools to learn how to see what it is. It's a cow. The cow's form is right here. There's his nose, here's his two eyes, and this is the head, and there's an ear. But just as you couldn't see that quickly, a child who has a disability can't see it at all. Still having trouble, I can come on up and show you. Don't feel bad, we couldn't do that either at first. So I would like you to help those children be able to see English, if you will. This bill will help meet their bench levels by providing them with the alternative education options available, as stated in law number 329.485. This bill is also going to give a list of qualified educational providers, which I like. This will take the guesswork out of which provider the parent should contract with to achieve the goals of the child. Did you know this fact? According to the National Institute of Health, researchers can now consider reading problems a major public health threat. 40% of children across the nation are poor readers. 20% have severe language learning problems called dyslexia. These children need to be identified early and taught in a special way so that they can have success in their everyday lives. The public school system, the traditional school system, does not work for a child that has dyslexia. Without assistance, the dyslexic student will find school frustrating. He's going to fall far behind, decide he's dumb. He's not going to be able to be a good role model in the classroom when he can't think or read. He's going to be a behavior problem, and often is. There's no cure. But there are special techniques which we have researched and know that are tried and true to relieve the students of the confusion and disorientation, thereby aiding them in their learning. I'd like to give you an example right now of how hard it is for a student who has dyslexia to think. Pretend you're all in your cars, and you're at a red light, and you have your foot on the brake. Another car pulls up next to you, and the person has its foot on the brake. All of a sudden, it starts to move. What do you do? Oh, I must be moving. And you put your foot on the brake, too. Why? Because you got disoriented. The children who have dyslexia get disoriented not just one time a day, but all through the day. As they look at words and can't read them, they get confused. Then they get disoriented. When that happens, you might as well forget to ask a child with dyslexia to read or to stand up and speak, because they can't do that. Only special providers with special training know how to use special methods to teach children with dyslexia. We at Mid Valley Learning Center have studied, researched, and know how to work with these children and have been doing it for 8 years. We have no money funded by the state or by the federal government. The term learning disability, we feel, is a term for the legislature, educational institutes, and for financial purposes only. The child who is dyslexic, he's going to fall under that code. You know, he will, but as it is written, but he's not helped enough in a special education room with a free educational system because the special education teachers have not been prepared to teach dyslexic children. And I have had many special education teachers come over and say just that, help me. And I have given them the help that they need. The special education rooms have children who have other learning disabilities, which are primarily the result of visual, hearing, physical handicaps, mental retardation, or, you know, emotional disturbance. Sometimes the students may be environmentally, culturally, or economically disadvantaged. But the dyslexic child, he's of average, above average, and maybe even genius IQ. But because of the gene on the arm of this chromosome number 6, which you know is responsible for him having these distortions, he has what we call dyslexia. Some of them cannot think in order to get the words out. Some of them cannot write it looks like, excuse me, doctors, if they're here, doctors writing, and some of them cannot read a simple sentence, run, gain, run. Without the special tools that specific providers can give them. Because of this unique problem, teachers, parents, and the child himself reach a point where they're all frustrated. They don't know what to do. Parents look for another special education provider, only to find out that their fees, which cover screenings, evaluations, and tutoring, they have to pay for. They don't have the schools to pay for them. Many special education providers receive no state or federal funding. We don't. All fees are paid by the parent. Parents are driven to help their children any way they can, and so they'll do almost anything to help. You would if it was your child. I would if it was my child. So some of them take two jobs to make this happen. The unfortunate thing is that many parents can't afford the tutoring. They lack the resources to take on school systems by filing suits to get public schools to pay for other special education providers, and they're lost. I've had to turn away hundreds of students because the parents don't have the money. I have bartered till I am bartering blue. I've had people come in and sweep or file or clean the cobwebs just so their child can come for a session. I have given up a salary last year so that the children can come. I personally can no longer give up my salary, and this bill will help these people choose trained professional or educational therapists who will have a major positive impact on the lives of these students and their parents, and it will be paid for by the state, as it should be. Among children identified as learning disabled by the third grade, 74% remain disabled by the 12th grade. Reading problems that are solved by 30 minutes in special education in kindergarten and first grade require 2 hours in third grade. What do you think it does in fourth and fifth? And now we are seeing many students are of the age of 13 to 16. I have one boy who pumps gas so he can come to Mid Valley Learning Center and get his education. President Bush said he wants to see every child in America read. Governor Kitzhaber wants to see all children in grades 1-3 to be able to read and to have a chance and to have early intervention. I believe this wholeheartedly, that if we had these children start to learn, the ones that have this learning disability, read at this young age and learn, then when they get to be 15 and 16, I wouldn't be seeing them. We have heard testimony here about people who want quality education, and they want accountability, and they want the budget to be right for the older students, for the students in second higher education. Our kids are never going to make it unless we give them this bill that gives these parents the right to choose a special education provider if the schools are not doing it. I want every parent to have the child to a right to find an educational provider, whether it's me or someone else. Someone who has the expertise to teach their child to read, thereby giving their children confidence and the knowledge to know that they're not dumb. And we have many students who come in. Wyatt was one of them who thought, I'm stupid. He came in like this. And the first day he went out like, hey, Mom, I could beat her at frogs and I'm not stupid. And frogs is a game that I play with the children to get them to learn focusing techniques. I want everyone to learn to read. I want every child to learn to read, just like President Bush and Kitzhaber and just like you. But they're only going to do that if they have a specific learning tool. And I'd like to refer to you to the tools that are in your packet again, your funny little packet. On the left side, there's a form that's called Distinctive Learning Techniques. And in back of it are pictures of our children using them. This is what makes us different in the special education room. The special education room does not have any of these distinctive techniques. These are techniques that we've researched and know that are tried and true. If you look at the first picture, there's a boy with an alphabet, and he is doing symbol mastery. And that happens to be Wyatt, and his mom is sitting next to me. And she can tell you that he had a hard time learning the alphabet, let alone what was the sequence of the letters, what came first, what came behind it. The second picture is of a girl using intellectual impressionism. And this is taped books, and you'll notice she has a colored overlay. And in your package, you're going to find you have color sheets, because we found that colored overlays like this and colored sheets help a dyslexic child to see better, to see the words better. There's no distortions. Sometimes we have to have glasses, and in that case, there's tinted glasses like Wyatt has and so many other children to help the distortions go away. We have distortions like rivers in pages, and we have distortions like blurriness or halos over words. But the child sometimes needs a tinted glass to help them be able to read. It takes away the, well, what it is called scotopic sensitivity syndrome. And what happens is the light from above hit a paper, and it's going too fast for the child to take in his eyes, a dyslexic child. So we dim that by providing them with colored overlays or colored glasses that help these distortions go away. I had one child look at me and said, oh my gosh, now the words aren't running together. Another one said, oh, where are the rivers? So we know that this system works. Everything I'm telling you today, I know works. The focusing technique using what we call the Ron Davis's mind's eye works. We know that because a child who has dyslexia, the back of their brain in the language area is not working properly. And so we give them the focusing technique to help them to jump chromosome 6 with the right and the left so that they join and can think logically. Most kids who have dyslexia don't have laterality. This is the right of me, this is the left, this is the front, this is the back. Turn them around, then where's the right? They'll say, right here. So we teach laterality exercises, which is the next one on the side, next picture. And we have assistive technology. We only have 3 computers, but we're doing the best we can with those. And we have anyone is welcome to donate anything that they can to our school. We would be more than welcome to have it. So parents who asked me to come today have asked me to stand up for them. They're not just 23 that come to us. There's 400, there's 1,000, there's 2,000. There's people who are out there who cannot afford a special education provider, but their child will never make it to high school unless they have one. So I'm asking you to give Bill 2020 a chance to be voted on and give all our chance, children, not just the remedial room, the kids who are in the remedial room, a chance, but the kids who aren't helped by that remedial room. Those are the ones we would like to see have a chance at instruction congruent with their needs. I want you to put the right choice for a provider in the hands of the people, the parent. And with this, I'm asking you to put the vote as it is. And now I'd like to introduce Susan Brown, who has been waiting patiently, and I want you to know this is her first time here. And she has agreed to come with me and explain to you what it's like for her son, Wyatt. Susan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hobson, and Representative Atkins. Thank you very much. I had a speech all wrote out, but I'm not going to read off of it. Some of the things that I would like to mention is that my husband and I both, we have 3 children that are dyslexic. Our oldest son is an 11th grader in Lebanon High School, and our daughter is a 9th grader at Lebanon High School. Our youngest, Wyatt, is a 5th grader, and he is now going to the Mid-Valley Learning Center, and we're also homeschooling him as of this last December. Wyatt was tested in the public school system and was under an IEP at his school. I would just like to give you...